Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Hey, Dave.
Yep. Can you?
We can hear you.
I know. So sorry about that. That is so strange. It was one of those things where I was trying to adjust the volume on that opening spot, and it played it again, and then adjust. Oh, man. So it was one of those mornings where you go, yeah, yes, Alice.
Well, good. It's good to have you on the show, Dave. Just wanted to let you know we could hear you, and the music's over, and we're ready.
Well, let's get... So, anyway, I'm hearing myself again. I'm so got some excellent... Good.
Dave?
We're here. Yes, Joe, let's get into an up report... And I'm going to dial in a landline so we get rid of the double thing here. So go ahead and
I'll just run through here. All right. Well, today we're up again. We're up 7:30 seconds on the day, most of it having to do with some fairly dovish comments from one of the Fed governors, Fed Governor Dudley. I'm sorry, not Daly. And, you know, this is just following up on last week. We had an improvement by about 125 basis points in MBS prices last week. Obviously, it was following the Fed meeting. That equates to about a 20 basis point improvement in mortgage rates. And we're about back to the point where we were in, you know, mid-June, late to mid-June. So we've seen a nice recovery in mortgage rates. Obviously, all this had to do with the Fed decision to leave asset purchases at the current level. And what the Fed said in regard to that was, one, that the economy had not improved sufficiently to taper. They said inflation remained low, which it does, and higher rates were possibly slowing the housing recovery. So, and, of course, that's going to happen, and that's going to happen when they start talking about tapering. So that's kind of a catch-22, isn't it? But the other thing they said, and it makes a lot of sense to me, they talked about the possibility of the government shutdown and the issues associated with the debt limit. You know, at this meeting, they had about a week and a half to know if a continuing resolution was going to get passed and the government was going to be able to pay for its money, pay for its activities and function going forward. And then within another few weeks, it was going to be a debt limit discussion. And so by this time, by the next Fed meeting, they should have those two uncertainties more certain, right? And so it makes sense to kind of wait, if only for that reason. So again, Fed did not begin to taper. All this does is, you know, extends the questions to a later date. When are they going to start to taper? How much are they going to start to taper? And which categories are they going to taper? So just all this seems to add to the amount of volatility we're going to see going forward. The irony of some of this is that the data that came out after the Fed decision was really quite good, especially existing home sales, which rose to the highest level since 2007. So some of that may be associated with pre-rise in rate contracts, but it's still a very nice situation to have that continued growth. And so, David, what to expect this week is I think, going to continue to be driven by Fed speakers. There are Fed speakers every day this week, but Wednesday. We've seen this morning's speaker had some influence on the market. There are multiple speakers on each Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. So lots of input coming from there, and lots of curiosity, too, as to how they're going to describe why, how they got to the decision they got to, and how they're going to provide guidance going forward. It should be an interesting time. The data that come out this week includes consumer confidence tomorrow, durable orders and new home sales on Wednesday, and then pending home sales on Thursday. Hey, we might even get an accurate jobless claims number on Thursday. You might know the last 2 weeks, computer glitches, I don't know what states they're in, but have caused the jobless claims number to be inaccurate. And then on Friday, the PCE, core PCE inflation index comes out along with consumer sentiment. So good week last week, starting out to be a good week this week as it relates to mortgage prices and mortgage rates. And stay tuned, see what the Fed speakers have. We'll see what effect they have on the market.
There's Fed speak is always going to have some kind of impact one way or another, Joe. So.
It really is.
But I'm sitting here looking. You could get addicted. I have really think that, you know, they talk about Facebook addiction, social media addiction. Well, you can get serious MBS quote line addiction when you start getting used to it, because it's really significant, especially about weeks like last week where, you know, you look at immediate impact on what, you know, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke was saying and the FOMC meeting. Fascinating information, and it's just impossible to manage a business in a volatile market such as this. It's impossible to manage it without having a service like MBS Quote Night. So, Joe, we appreciate you bringing us the report. Apologize
Absolutely.
For the audio issues starting the broadcast off. I think I touched one button one too many times.
Yeah.
So just leave things alone and let it go at that. But, Joe, thank you so much, folks. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Well, you know, thank God for old technology, because you get to dial in with the old POTS phone system, the plain old telephone system, and make it work. So we're doing that today. I had to go by the go past the other higher tech type approach to getting access to the switchboard. So anyway, good to have you all with us. It's Monday the 23rd. Start off with that, as we do, just before we get into Alice's segment. A special thank you goes out to all our first-time listeners, and we have later in the broadcast, by the way, a special hot topic with our very own Profit Doctor, talking about continuing our discussion about vendor validation and how critical it is. You know, it's one of those things with all the environment we're in right now, you just got to absorb all this, do your best to absorb it. Well, best way to do it is sitting and listening to the Profit Doctor as he lays out for you pretty compelling, interesting discussion about vendor validation, what we need to do, and a lot of people are missing this one. So stay tuned all the way to the end of the broadcast for the Profit Doctor talking about that. Special thank you goes out to United Guarantee, who is our sponsor. And when it comes to the new ability to repay, the APR and QRM qualified, QM, qualified mortgage rules that take effect on January 10th, there's one thing you don't have to worry about is mortgage insurance if you're working with United Guarantee. United Guarantee's qualified mortgage insurance, QMI, products make calculating the points and fees much easier when you're making sure you have the total that your total is within the 3% maximum cap on points and fees. You just really want to have a service like what UG, United Guarantee, is providing. So be sure to check it out. United Guarantee's QMI product suite includes post-pay monthly premiums, a new refund on single premium option, and a lender-paid versions for both monthly and single premiums. Each of these options is QM-friendly, compliant, and otherwise put you in good, secure city with fee structure to help avoid being included in the maximum 3% fee calculation. So anyway, check it out over at www.ugcorp.com or click to the Lincoln on Lending website in the upper right-hand corner. Click on the logo for UG, and you'll get rushed right over to their site and walk you through it. Again, special thank you to United Guarantee and all our friends there for making this program possible through their sponsorship And again, congratulations on their 50th anniversary. Joe Farr, thanks so much for your report on that. Let's see if we got Tony. After we beat up on at Paul Mallow last week, I'm not sure he's going to be dialing in this week. That was so much fun. He's a good guy, and we look forward to seeing if we can't get him back on. Alice, there's your legislative update. I was reading through your notes here, and, you know, we've got the possibility of FHFA reducing the Fannie Mae limit. What's the probability of that happening, Alice?
Well, you know, I'm obviously not the one to know the ultimate answer to that question, other than I want to talk about it, because Dave Stevens mentioned this last week. FIFA came out with this, I think, September 9th, where they, you know, are kind of hinting around that in next year we should expect that they want to try and have, well, obviously, less business going to Fannie and Freddie, and one of the ways they're talking about doing that is reducing the loan limits. You know, we had them pushed up. Really, I think over the last several years, in a time when mathematically they may have been able to reduce this. And I guess I just want to make sure everyone gets their voice heard on this. So far, the Builders Association and Realtors Association have commented on this. You really need to get to your congressman and put some pressure on FIFA with that. Any type of change in the housing limits right now would really have a negative impact. And keep in mind that even FHA's numbers are tied to Fannie Freddie's. And we have most of the country, a big chunk of the country, I guess I should say, is sitting at 65% of Fannie Freddie's limit of 417. So if you change that number, you're impacting absolutely everything. I mean, obviously, their idea is to try and open up the private markets, but Dave, I wanted your thoughts on that. I wanted, you know, does anybody out there think that lowering this number is really going to bring private capital back into the market?
No, it's counterproductive. I mean, anyone you talk to out there and the feedback we get from our listeners is going, what are they thinking? And it's just, I mean, the big question, I think what's driving some have actually had some, the few that had any positive things to say about it, Al said, but look what's happening with Redwood Trust securitizations. Clearly the jumbo market can get fulfilled by going and looking to the Redwood Trusts of the world. And I'm going, but I'm not sure if you go into that cuts into some really key markets that are really critical that we have liquidity, and specifically we think of California, some of the higher balance markets, and just don't think that is a correction that is needed at this particular time.
Yeah, I think that's generally where the whole industry is at. So, folks, don't let this slide by in being busy and back to school and everything else going on this time of year and trying to refocus on your businesses. Make sure that your voice gets heard on that. We really don't have any new legislation. I checked, so we are watching that Mortgage Tax Forgiveness Act and FHA solvency as we reach, you know, this last week here or so of the fiscal year to be able to see if FHA is going to need any money from Treasury. So we are watching those things for you. And one tidbit I wanted to make sure I let everybody realize, I got a great piece of information courtesy of Pulte Homes and the underwriters that were attending our risk management workshop, and they sent over a version of the original HUD, the FHA manual, and I think it's really interesting that in here it says there is no mechanical way to make a lending decision. And they have a graph in here that talks about if someone makes $2,000 on an annual basis, then their range of rent annually should be about between $250 and $450 annually. So it's very interesting, the perspective. It talks a lot about really looking at the character and other things. Today we would say, hey, we're not allowed to do that today and considering for a loan decision. But interestingly enough, it uses the term ability to repay back in 1934.
Wow.
So that was, I thought it was a real interesting bit of history we have out there today. So anyway, that's my quick report today, Dave, as we're going to catch up. I know we have a lot we have to talk about on the vendor management side later on in the program.
Yeah, we do. There's so much to talk about and catch up, and I want to give full time to that. And Andy is prepared. He's got all the bullets on the gun. He is ready to, maybe that's not the right expression. We're talking about CFPB. That may not be the right expression to use. But he definitely is coming loaded with great information, and we're going to be talking about that. Can't wait. I just got an email from Paul Mallow. We apologize. He can't make the broadcast today, and so we wish Paul well on that. Just taking a quick look at the headlines. NationStar gets $1 billion in servicing advance facility. Banks continue to shed. I'm reading headlines, by the way, off of the www.imfnews.com website. Some great information. Head on over to what they're writing. Paul's writing a lot of articles. There's a lot of great information up there. to garner and read. So be sure to check it out. Alice, thank you so much for bringing this report. Look forward to being right back with your discussion and comments, Alice, as we get in further into it. Next up is Tony Garitano. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back. Is it just me, or is the dial-in, or is it just sound like the audio coming out of a Blog Talk today is a little on the fuzzy or something side? I don't know. But anyway, maybe it's the connection I have here with technology. It's just a miracle how this all works. We all dial in with voice over IP lines, and then we get in here, and it's just amazing. And so the fact that all this works is quite astounding. And to talk about astounding and how to figures it all out is Tony Garitano. Welcome to the broadcast, Tony. Good to have you back with us. How does all this stuff work, Tony? Gosh.
With a lot of pain involved.
Well,
I think even lenders will attest to that, Dave.
Yeah, I think that's true. One of the things that's been catching my attention is, the whole MSMO world and what's going on in MSMO. Sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. It seems like CFPB, the shadow CFPB, is spreading out all over everything. But why should lenders pay attention to MSMO and not let that slip from their focus and view, Tony?
Well, I think the main reason seems to me to be that the FHFA, when they mandated a more data-driven approach to lending, the GSEs interpreted that as you must embrace MSMO. So appraisals and loan delivery is now required to adhere to the MSMO standard. And my personal hope is that as we move to a more data-driven mortgage process, that more constituents within the industry, whether it be investors or regulators or lenders, will embrace MSMO and make it the true, industry standard that it really should be. If we have one standard, it'll really help everybody. So.
Yeah, it is true. Yeah, the standardization does bring brings the efficiencies and cost, both from a practical operational standpoint, but just overall cost structure, which is to the point that the profit doctors always talk about. Anything new going on with MSMO these days? I was thinking about that over the weekend, and then I see your notes coming in and going, oh, brilliant. He must have been reading my mind. Because I haven't been thinking about it as much as I have, other than now that we have the annual conference coming up in Washington, D.C., you get the invitations, one of which has been from MSMO. So what's new going on there?
Well, the reason why I thought it would be good to talk about it, Dave, is because the trimester meeting is coming up for MSMO, and they did pass along some information to me in the hopes that I would get it out there to your reader or listeners and to my readers as well. But what they're doing is kind of technical, but, for MSMO, everything is pretty technical. But they're announcing the elevation of reference model versions 3.0 and 3.1 to recommendation status. And I know you're going to ask me, what does that mean, right? So recommendation status is the highest possible maturity level for a MSMO standard. The MSMO Residential Standards Governance Committee elevated versions 3.0 and 3.1 to recommendation status based on evidence of multiple successful industry implementations and the advice of the MSMO Architecture Workgroup. So basically what that means is that these standards, these new versions of the standard, are getting ready to hit the streets.
Interesting. Fascinating amount of information going on, and the changes going on in so many aspects of the industry. do you see, one of the questions I had as I'm considering NISMO is that, you know, we were using, it was driving Paul Moll crazy last week when you were used to come up with a new acronym, you know, using the same MSR instead of being, you know, mortgage servicing rights, having to be a mortgage system of record. You know, do you see the systems, the LOS systems or the mortgage systems of record out there being, it's keeping up, or how can they keep up with this? How are they working closely with these standards? Are they truly in step with everything that's going on, or what's the attitude amongst the LOSs, MSRs?
I think the LOSs are very interested in MSMO. A lot of them donate their time and volunteer as part of MSMO because it really does make their lives much easier.
I think that'd be the case.
I think the problem with any data standard is that it always lags the industry. So
yeah.
there are new standards, there are new data fields that are coming up all the time, especially with all of these new regulations. So MSMO has to play catch up to that as well. So, you know, because you can't expect MSMO to standardize something that's, you know, simply not there.
Right.
So the data standards themselves are a lagging indicator to the industry about, you know, what data elements are important. So I think that it's a work in progress, but I was very optimistic when FHFA embraced MSMO, and I think that we're going to see more of that. I think the LOS systems, you know, MSR systems, whatever you want to call them, are doing their best to use whatever is available to them to make their job easier. And, you know, as we all know, Dave, I mean, you've been diligent in reporting it, and so has Alice in her segment. You know, the new rules and regulations are coming fast and furious, and MSMO really does help technology providers adapt quicker and integrate faster and cheaper. So, you know, when you talk about things like faster, cheaper, quicker, you know, that's going to be top of everyone's mind these days.
Yep.
So, you know, I think that it's a good thing for the industry.
Well, there's no question it is huge, and you have to stay tuned, listen to the rest of the broadcast, because we've got Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, coming on talking about, you know, vendor validation, and that goes right smack in the middle of this. And my last question is to you. I got so much thoughts. I mean, do you really think the vendors are all ready for this, and the validation process being having the examination of their systems and how they're doing, what they're representing? Do you think most of them are embracing it or ready for it? Your thoughts, Tony?
I would say my short answer would be no.
that's what I thought might be the answer. That's what
that's, you know, what I'm hearing is that a lot of them are struggling, but they're working very hard to get there, and my guess is that they will be there. It may take a little bit of time, but they're aware of their responsibilities. I don't think they're there yet. If we talk about, you know, every system as a whole, there are individual systems, I'm sure, that are there. But I think if I was to make a general statement, in my opinion, I would say we have some work to do.
Yeah, not surprising. Tony Garitano, so good to have you with us each and every week. Appreciate you taking time to dial in. Folks, if you need to get a hold of Tony, be sure, by the way, check out their website, www.progressinlending.com, or call Tony at 203-529-3131. Of course, his email address, again, is at Tony, T-O-N-Y, at progressinlending.com. Tony Garitano, good to have you with us. Appreciate you very much being a part of the broadcast each and every week. And I want to say thank you again for honoring this broadcast with the Innovation Award that you did at your conference. Thank you so much. Appreciate you as a good friend and a partner to this broadcast.
Thank you, Dave.
You bet. Folks, there's just so much to time think about when you got that, when we're talking about, you know, where we're going and the tsunami of information that's coming at us. Last week we had David Stevens on the broadcast, and I tell you, I encourage you guys to go back and listen. All the broadcasts we seem to do has got so much good content. Many of you talk about how you go back and download it. I mean, it's evident because we're now up to 285,000 downloads over this radio program. It's just astounding to me how many have downloaded and actually are listening to it, making it part of their regular day, getting information. So, great, appreciate it. And, folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break with the Profit Doctor. But the Profit Doctor is not going to give just his segment. He is the whole Hot Topic segment, talking about CFPB Bulletin 2012-03, effective April 12, 2012. Can't wait to talk about it. It's scary, very scary, but very absolutely necessary. We'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Good to have you back with us, each and every one of you, and the thousands. I'm looking at how many people are dialed in from literally all over the United States. Really appreciate you making this part of your broadcast, and this is just what they're dialed in. Amazing. All over the country. Thank you so much for being a part of this broadcast and telling others about it. I get a lot of comments about the Profit Doctor, and a lot of people just value his input, his insights, as well as Alice's and Joe's and all the commentary and the special guests we bring on here. But we're really going back to a broadcast we had 2 weeks ago and continuing with that. We had David Stevens scheduled for last week, and so we interrupted the flow a little bit. But you can go back and encourage you to go download the broadcast. I believe it was on the 9th. That was the 2 weeks ago. Two Mondays ago, and listen to that again. We really opened up the topic, but we're going to get into it in a much deeper way. And folks, just fasten your seatbelts. There's more information we can possibly get through today, but we're going to do our best to do it. Profit Doctor, good to have you on the broadcast. I know you're
Hello,
up in
Dave.
Dallas, and you're dialed in on your cell phone, and I appreciate that. So for those people that are used to hearing that real crystal clear audio that you usually have, it's not that because you're dialed in, because you're out doing what you do best, meeting with customers and talking with people. So let's get into it. And I think it's great, Andy, that we talk about the story about American Express, because I think to really kick this off, people need to really understand that this has been. This isn't a bulletin or a requirement that is coming out. It's out there. It's existing. And there's already fines and penalties being there. And folks, when you start listening to this, I'm just telling you, do not freak out. I mean, well, okay, saying do not be scared is like being in a horror flick, a horror movie, and saying don't be scared. You're gonna feel the emotions of fear, but it is really building a solid foundation under your operation, and that's what this broadcast and specifically this hot topic is about, building a solid foundation. But let's start with a company you would think has a really good solid foundation, American Express. Andy, share that story with them.
Yeah, sure, Dave. Well, as we know, the bulletin from the CFPB came out in April last year, so it's 18 months ago about. And this bulletin, bottom line of the bulletin is you have to make certain that any third party that you've engaged for any service that relates to a customer or a customer's data, that party that you've engaged has all of the tools in place to ensure that they comply with all federal laws relating to consumer protection. That's bottom line of it is. And there's a whole bunch of rules you have to follow, and things you got to do that. So in October, this past, almost a year ago, last October, American Express was fined $82 million for noncompliance with CFPB Bulletin 2012-13. So the question about is it effective already? Absolutely, it's effective already. American Express just got sued. Does CFPB intend for this bulletin to be followed completely? Absolutely. To the extent that they will fine you if you don't? Absolutely. So it's here to stay. And Dave, you mentioned earlier that we think of the CFPB as the big bad wolf. And the big bad wolf's gonna come and blow our house down. So
So what we want to do today on Lickin' on Lending is start building the foundation for everybody to have a brick house. Because remember, brick houses, see if the big bad wolf can't blow down a brick house. And right now, unfortunately, a lot of people have straw houses. So we're in the business today of converting our straw houses into brick houses.
That today, is yeah.
Well, it was your idea, the big bad wolf of the CFPB. That's a great analogy.
Well, the reality is I mean, just looking up here on our website and where we feature this broadcast and coming up at the annual conference, we've got Richard Cordray and Sean Donovan, and we've got a number of people, Luce Renateri, the big MBA conference is one you're going to want to attend. But also in there, I'm looking at the stick of dynamite that I have with a timer attached to it. That's what it feels like for many people. And I think the point is, when we were talking about the big bad wolf, you know, the one that built their house in the stand and the various scenarios, but the one that built a brick house when they came and blew, I mean, this does not have to take companies out. And but a lot of people go, Dave, private doctor, come on, Andy. You tell me American Express isn't one of the ones that had invested millions of dollars into compliance? Why do you suspect, and then I want to get Joe and Alice into this discussion, but why do you suspect, I know you haven't done a great exhaustive analysis on that particular lawsuit, why do you think a company, American Express, is going to miss it, and why should our listeners have hope that they can avoid what American Express was not able to avoid?
Well, because the bulletin was effective a year and a half ago, and it included a provision that you have to make certain that every single third-party agreement has very specific language in there relating to their performance standards and the consequence for their non-performance. It also required them to have a bunch of structure and internal control, and obviously American Express didn't want to fight it out in court, so they settled with the CFPB and agreed to pay the fine, and who's to say that American Express didn't have it in place? But American Express ran the numbers and decided it was better to pay the fine than fight. And
wow.
So it could be that American Express did it right. I don't know. And it could be that they left off. They forgot to dot an I or cross a T. I don't know.
Well,
all I do know is that CFPB is there and they're going to be following this stuff.
Yeah, and that's the reality is we got an industry that has some exposure. I think Tony's comments were very honest and transparent that, you know, he's concerned that a lot of companies, even the vendors, aren't ready for this. So let's get into it. A mortgage lender is likely to be responsible for actions of a service provider. So let's get into the discussion of that. And then, Alice and Joe, please jump in here at any point in time for points of clarification on that. But, Andy, let's talk about the vendors out there and the actions that the mortgage lender is responsible for the service provider's actions. Put that all in context for us, please.
Okay, let's remember that this bulletin is applicable to any person or company who offers a service to a consumer or has access to protected consumer data. So that's a very, very broad brush. It could be if a janitor walks by and sees a loan file open on a processor's desk and has access to the credit report data or the Social Security number, then that janitor now is a covered third-party service provider. And what the bulletin basically goes on to say is that whenever you hire a third-party service provider, and they acknowledge that there is a legitimate business reason often to engage third-party service providers because of various issues, you know, relating, you know, certain specific expertise, cost. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why you want to hire a service provider. But if you do hire a service provider, you have to make certain that the service provider is complying with all the rules. And the bottom line of this thing is, if a service provider that you engage, like let's just say, pick one of the big LOSs, or yeah, I really don't like LOS because that's such a narrow focus. It's really, they are the service provider of record. Anyway, you pick a
right.
big computer system, Ellie Mae. Let's say Ellie Mae and Compass were to let their consumer data get hacked and a bunch of Social Security numbers got stolen. The lender that hired Ellie Mae to hold the consumer's data could be and very likely will be jointly liable and separately liable for the damage to the consumers because of the third-party provider's failure. It's very clear. It says, depending on the circumstances, legal responsibility may lie with the mortgage lender as well as the service provider. So whoever you hire, you are not absolved of liability. It's like letting your 16-year-old kid drive the car on the highway. They get into a wreck, you're going to get sued. That's the same thing. Whenever you hire a third-party service provider, you're responsible for their actions, even if it's a company that's a huge, well-known company like Ellie Mae.
Hey, Andy, this is Alice, and I'm wondering if you can adjust your mic a little bit because it sounds kind of muffled to me. I'm trying to make sure I catch everything you're saying because it's so valuable. I know after our last call, we talked about that we wanted to be clear about the vendors that it does apply to. Because when you referenced, you know, the janitor, and I think last time we talked about, you know, getting your whole vendor list, there are times you can exclude people from the list, right? That it's, you know, so some examples of vendors that you wouldn't have to make sure you had a full policy on and full vetting processes. You know, if I have proper security, I don't have to get into validating every single third-party 1099 company I'm using. Could you elaborate a little bit on some of the other exceptions we came up with?
Well, it comes down to, first off, you have to have a policy that defines strict compliance with the CFPB bulletin. And the bulletin discusses that this is applicable to any service provider who provides a financial services product to a consumer or has data of a consumer. So if your security guard that you hired doesn't have any access to a consumer and doesn't have any access to consumer data, then they most likely are not going to be included in the list. They'll be listed as a third-party service provider in your list, but the risk weighting of them will be very, very low, even to the point of the bottom of the list, because they do not have access to consumer data. But
so can I ask you there, are you picturing that they have to actually, in the risk weighting, can't you get to the point where you can say there's no risk, no exposure, and so I don't need to do anything? Or, you know, should they have more notes in that? Or is there ever such a point as which a vendor is at zero risk? When you say risk weighting,
well,
I just want to make sure we're all clear on.
Well, my experience in dealing with this is as a CFO of a commercial bank, and the standards that commercial banks follow are basically the same as what the CFPB has implemented. And I can tell you that when an examiner comes in, and if you've excluded a vendor from being covered under vendor management, that's already is going to probably be a finding. So the safest thing to do is to list all vendors under your vendor management structure, and then risk weight your vendors with the security guard and the plan people at the bottom, or people who provide you certain information at the board level that have no contact with consumers or access to consumer data. They're going to be excluded. Like a training group is like when you go into a company and provide training, you don't talk to the customers and you don't have access to any customer data. So you would be at the bottom of the list and possibly even completely excluded. But my experience is that as soon as you start saying these people are exempt, if the CFPB examiner comes in and the 27-year-old kid sits there and says, nope, I think these should be on the list, you're just creating an opportunity for them to challenge your selection. If you put all vendors on the vendor management list, which they should be, then that way you risk weight them and put it down at the bottom, and that way at least they're listed, they're on the list, they're in the vendor management structure, but as it relates to the CFPB bulletin, they're low risk because they don't have access to consumer data. That's my opinion only. I'm not saying that's what the CFPB would do. That's what I'm saying I would do based on my experience as CFO of a commercial bank.
Well, and then somebody maintaining that list. So every time you have a vendor, making sure it hits that list, you know, not conducting it, and then maybe double checking it annually based on all the 1099s that are issued or, you know, other format. Because, Joe, I know we hung up the phone on that last call. You're going, hey, wait a minute, I want everybody to know I'm not a vendor that's subject to this.
Andy, I have a question regarding Ellie Mae as an example. It's inconceivable to a lot of people sitting out there that are smaller companies but use Ellie Mae, and they're being tasked with assessing Ellie Mae's internal control structures, their financial security, their hiring practices conceivably. How does somebody go about doing that, or is there like a PCI compliance certification or an audit for financial side? Can people provide somebody a certification that says, I have passed whatever standards the CFPB establishes?
If you want to rely on another third party to validate the compliance with another third party, then, yeah, you can do that. But I wouldn't. I would have a – again, my perspective, CPA, you know, commercial bank, this is a new world for mortgage banking. And I'm going maybe more conservative than some people are comfortable going. But we know that they find American Express. So they expect this to be followed to the letter of the law. So I would follow it to the letter of the law. And they say conduct a thorough due diligence to verify that the service provider understands and is capable of complying with federal consumer laws. Well, what does that mean, verify that they're capable of complying with federal consumer laws? You've got to define that for yourself. How much is enough? What is it that you think is the right thing to do? And Ellie Mae is going to have to do this with every mortgage company that they're dealing with. Every technology provider is going to have to do this for every mortgage company that they work with. So it's all hands on deck. Everybody's got to comply. Everybody puts together a package. We do vendor validation for commercial banks where we go into very, very large subservicers, because for a mortgage company, one of the biggest risks in vendor validation is your subservicer. So we go into very large companies to validate their compliance with the service level agreement of every customer that they're subservicing for. And it can't be done on a blanket basis. It has to be done every single customer. And these big companies are understand that, actually have departments set up just to deal with third-party reviews, because that's a reality of business today.
Well, and I think the importance on the technology side is, you know, like Joe, you're talking about coding in the background. That is something that, although the original out-of-the-box package may be the same, so many companies customize everything. So now you have to test those processes. And then, Andy, I think you brought up a huge point I want to make sure everybody picked up on is, if you have a subservicer and their systems are secure, you have to validate your own particular pipeline is being managed properly within that. And I think the large companies, like you said, are going to have departments to handle this. It's more some of the mid-size and smaller vendors who have to try
exactly.
and prove, you know, that I'm a good person, I do this right. You know, I think that's where the challenge is.
Yeah, but to have to prove it to every different customer just seems totally inefficient.
Well, wouldn't you validate it in, like, you would have to do your own validation of your sample, you know, such as Fannie and Freddie saying you still have to audit 10% of, you know, your 10% of what the auditor's doing. You have to recheck it to make sure that your particular pipeline is matching up with their procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
you have to probably take the same kind of statistical sample.
Well, and since when did efficiency become a standard for federal regulation?
Right.
Well, then let me call it something else, which is practical.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's not practical for a lot of people at certain size companies to go into Ellie Mae and do what is being suggested.
Well, I'm saying for a subservicer, you have to do that. I'm not saying that you're going to go on site and inspect Ellie Mae's internal controls necessarily, but I do think you have to get some set of documentation from Ellie Mae where they represent that they do follow the provisions of CFPB Bulletin 2012-13 and 03 and list it out. And it's very clear. It's not ambiguous. In the bulletin, which is very easily to obtain, there's five steps that everybody has to do. It's not how much is enough as it relates to due diligence is a fuzzy thing, and that's going to have to be addressed by each company. But, you know, like it or not, we got to do what it says.
There's no question. Let's talk about CFPB expectations and what they will require and will test to confirm as valid. So if you could get into the CFPB expectations of them. And looking at the notes, there's so much I want to cover as we get through this. So let's cover that again, add to the – you've already touched on this a bit, but Andy, if you could get into that a little bit in a little more significant way, deeper way.
Okay, well, it says that the CFPB expects that mortgage lenders must have an effective process for managing the risks of service provider relationships. So what does that mean? Well, they go on to identify a couple of different things. And the CFPB was very clear to point out that they say that their expectations apply consistently regardless of if you're an FDIC or OCC bank or a mortgage lender. It doesn't matter. They expect this bulletin to be applied completely, and they expect the implementation to be consistent among commercial banks and mortgage banks. So bottom line of it is that mortgage banks are treated the same as a commercial bank. Again, back to Joe's point.
Yeah, we can argue about that, but the bottom line is that is a requirement. It doesn't matter if you're regulated by, as a bank or a non-bank. You've got to comply with this. And so that's there. And, what's rolling across my mind, which I'm sure is rolling across many listeners that are working for or own smaller mortgage companies, there's just no way, Dave. I don't have the resources of a commercial bank. Is this throwing a real disadvantage us to the point where smaller companies can survive? And I think that the answer is yes, you can survive. It's just listening to this kind of broadcast, getting this information, getting hold of folks like Andy. So let's get into that a little bit further. Lenders must ensure that their relationships with service providers do not present an unwarranted risk is one of your points in here. What are the steps that they should follow in that, Andy?
Okay, so the CFPB expects that for every service provider who has direct contact with a customer or holds consumer data, that you conduct a thorough due diligence to verify that the service provider understands and is capable of complying with federal consumer law. So it could be that you get a document from them where they represent that. There's a bunch of different elements to this. And that's part of what needs to be identified in your policy is you define the policy for third-party management as a whole. You'll create a policy that describes it and a procedure that includes these things. Your procedures have to mirror the content of this bulletin, and you then go on to further define it by identifying risk weighting and the consequences of the risk, the cost to the company of a failure, the cost to the consumer potentially of a failure. So you have to identify the risk, the probability of an occurrence, and the consequence upon an occurrence if one of the service party providers does not comply with federal consumer law. You have to review the service provider's policies and procedures, internal controls, and training materials to ensure that the service provider does conduct appropriate training and oversight of employees or agents as it relates to complying with consumer federal law. So from the case of Ellie Mae, they say, please let me see the documentation that indicates that you're complying with this standard. And they'll go, okay. And so Ellie Mae will give you something that says, we train all of our people every month to comply with consumer law. We make sure all new employees are trained in consumer law. We make sure that all of our training materials are distributed via email to every new employee in every quarter that relates to changes in federal consumer law. And now you put that in your file for Ellie Mae. So you've got a folder for every single vendor who is a covered vendor, a vendor who is subject to these requirements, and you document your file, and then you update it every month or every quarter, depending upon what your policy says you have to do.
So that's including what?
I was going to say that the next point is you have to include in the contract with the service provider that there are clear expectations about their compliance with consumer federal law, as well as you have to have appropriate and enforceable consequences for violating any aspect of their compliance with federal consumer law, including if they were to engage in unfair or deceptive practices. So that means that if they violate any federal law, you can fire them, and you have ways of managing their relationship. That has to be in your contract. I've had vendors in the past, as CFO of a commercial bank, where if we had a vendor who would not let us put the provisions in the contract that complied with the FFBIC is the big group of which CFPB is a part of that defines the examination standards for supervised and non-supervised lenders. So within the FFBIC, there's documentation that structures us, and so we would not enter into a relationship with a third-party service provider who would not let us put into the contract the provisions that are required under the bulletins.
But a lot of these contracts already exist. Is it possible, in your opinion, or if you walked, you took over and became a CFO, CFO, and you were now handled the responsibility of compliance with all this, Andy, would you go back and try to negotiate a lot of contracts? And what if the vendor came back and says, sorry, the agreement's the agreement. We're not renegotiating that thing. We're not putting that in there. How would you handle that? For those of our listeners that are owners of businesses that face that task, what's your recommendation?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and they would need to discuss something like that with their lawyer. The financial aspect of that would be, what's the consequence of a contract breach with that vendor versus what's the consequence of a regulatory breach with the CFPB? And it's been my experience in dealing with vendors who work with regulated entities that they understand these points. And if this vendor is working with a lot of supervised entities like mortgage banks, then they're going to already have a path in place to deal with this. If they didn't and refused to, then someone senior in the organization is going to have to make the decision between the which is the lesser of two evils, knowingly violating the CFPB bulletin with a plan to replace it when the contract expires, or subject to fines resulting from the CFPB because you didn't have a contract that specifically complies with the bulletin.
Yeah, you know, and I can jump in here, too, as a vendor,
yes.
You know, as Indicom providing services, you know, globally, and you're in at a national level, we have services where we do have customer contact. So you're, as a vendor, you know you have to comply with this, and you make the changes, whatever your client wants, and you make sure you comply. You know, we do the fair lending and the UDAAP training. You know, if any time that a lender wants something specific, and you have to recognize, you know, if my folks are talking to consumers, I want them to be in compliance with the law. So I don't think the large vendors are the ones that have the problems. It's a matter, like you said, Andy, if they've just got to get it in writing and sometimes in a legal agreement. You know, they're really, what folks should really do is look at the five bullets, and a couple of them seem pretty straightforward. I think the challenge starts to be in your own due diligence and having your own internal controls for the ongoing monitoring. So a lot of companies have the good onboarding process. I do well at making sure I get my vendors onboarded, and I've got to make sure now I'm monitoring them. The last thing I think, too, is that one bullet is taking prompt action to address fully any problems identified. You know, if you've got a five-year relationship with a vendor, is a regulator really going to believe you've never had a problem, right? So you really have to look at, and I've got that process set up as well. Yes, with us, it would be, yes, you have no problems. But, you know, other vendors, you have to say, I may have a problem, and I have to make sure I have that monitoring process to detect it.
Well, let's get into, I want to talk quickly, I'm looking at the notes on how much we have yet to cover in such a short amount of time. We only got 7 minutes left of the broadcast. How will the CFPB test for this compliance and this? If they walk through the average mortgage lender's doors, how are they going to be testing for this, Andy?
Well, the neat thing about, if you want to see a positive side of this, some sort of silver lining, is that this is an open book test. We're not going to be surprised about what they're going to ask for. They've told us what they're going to ask for. We have access, everybody does, has access to the CFPB examination manual. All you got to do is look it up. And in the CFPB examination manual, under the section of the part Alice was just talking about, the UDAAP, which stands for, get this, it seems like such a innocuous acronym, UDAAP. It stands for unfair, deceptive, or abusive acts or practices. That's what UDAAP is. So I was like, oh, my gosh, they're going to be measuring us under the unfair, deceptive, or abusive acts or practices section? Well, they are. Under Section 2, letter G of the examiner's manual, it specifically requires the examiners to review the mortgage lender's policies and controls related to third-party contracts, including performance reviews, third-party agreements, contractual performance standards, and monitoring process. So there you go. We know right out of the gate we have to have a way of having performance reviews of our third-party service providers. We have to have third-party agreements that contain the appropriate contractual performance requirements and a monitoring process, our own internal monitoring process, to make certain that we're watching this stuff diligently. So really, the point is, it's not a matter of if they will review this. They are going to review this. It's a matter of when they get to you. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's not if it's going to happen, it's when it happens. And these are the things you need to. Joe, you've been quiet as we sit here listening to this. Any thoughts on this? And especially as I start thinking, Joe, about the consequences of all this. It's just astounding.
Well, certainly, but it you know, the questions come to me as to how far do you go? You know, we talked about this the other day, and I understand it's hard to define that generically, but when you start thinking about all the people that help you do what you do, and some of them are obvious, like the LOS system or the you know, the hedge consulting firm, the product pricing engine, the dot prep, company, the appraisal services, the shredding services. I mean, so where is there any guidance that someone can take to think, well, like the shredding service company, do I need to go visit their services on site, their local shredding company? And you know, so how do you help people understand how much, where to start and where to stop?
I got one suggestion: retain Andy to get his company and Alice. Well, get someone who's familiar with it. But Andy, answer that as best you can with a couple of minutes remaining, literally 2 minutes.
Well, thorough due diligence. What is a thorough due diligence of a vendor who has access to protected data? I would say that I'd want to make certain that they're going to do what they're going to do. And, you know, we do diligence on companies all around the country for acquisitions. We also do it for warehouse line lenders. So we know what it's like to go in and look at a company. And so I would step back and think, okay, what is it that I can do to ensure that this service provider is complying with federal law and that the consumer data is protected? So I would, if in the case of a shredding company, check references. Do you want to go on site and look at their processes? You know, Joe, that's a tough call. If it was me and a bank and we had a large volume and a single service provider, I might go do an on-site check just to watch, to see if someone, when they open up those boxes with all that confidential data in there, if they've got people that actually look at it and sitting there taking notes, what are the policies that they implemented to ensure that their employees are not writing down Social Security numbers? How do they do that? How do you test it? You test it by watching it. You look at their policy and you make sure it's getting done by taking a look sometime.
Can I ask a quick question, though? Joe, you brought up appraisers. That's a good one. Do you consider an appraiser to be a vendor that falls in this category?
You're asking that of Andy, I think.
Personal information.
Yeah,
Andy, you know, he's going to say that depends. I know it.
Doctor always goes, he's a CPA. What do you think? Well, that depends.
Well,
Andy,
you know, you're right. I'm a CPA who's done a lot of work with federal examiners. I manage the federal examination interface for Bank of America's mortgage division when I was there. And every time you think you have it figured out, they come up with a reason to make it be different. So
it's
a little bit like nailing Jell-O to a wall, and I in no way want for what we say here on the show to be the basis for someone to say, well, Lincoln on Lending said we could do it this way.
Right, right.
You know, don't even go there. This is absolutely not the case. These are our opinions only. And you have to form your own opinion and write your policy to accommodate that.
I'm getting requests that we continue this broadcast and continue to dive into this because, Andy, we haven't even gotten to the short-term, long-term stuff that's in your notes, and we're out of time for this broadcast. And the reality is, folks, I just want to say this. I'm pulling this right off of Andy's notes from the broadcast. We are going to be doing television. I mean, we're going to be providing almost like turning this into where you can literally listen, but you'll also see what we're looking at here. That's coming up here hopefully before the end of the year. But CFP Bulletin 2012-03 is, number one, it's comprehensive. It's not optional. It has teeth. All of the American Express fine of $82.8 million, and it was effective. It was effective 18 months ago. It's not going to be effective. It is already, and I think that we're going to get into the next steps and some of the short-term, long-term things you can do in an upcoming broadcast because this is exhaustive. It is critical, folks, that you know what you're doing and paying attention. We appreciate you, Andy Schell, for bringing us this. each and every week. And
let me interject one thing, if I can, before the drum start, and that is that I've been in commercial bank management for a very, very long time, mortgage lending in commercial banks. You can do this. I've done it for 30 years and never had an issue with vendor management.
Build it. The CFPB may be viewed as the big bad wolf, but you can build a brick house, folks. Do it. Come back next week. We're going to continue on some of these topics. Appreciate you tuning in and telling others about it. Have a blessed week, everyone.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.